to me. And she says basically that they go and they run people's plates. That's how we sometimes find warrants and stuff, sir. That we're police officers. That's what we do.
That's Kevin Costella from Fire Dog Lake. You can find his reflections of the NATO 3 trial. He had some other juicy stuff about this woman going to the you can't get it out there. I guess we got to call in, and they're already calling in just to make sure the line works. Okay, call back if you're trying to get on the air, and it's over to the labor hour. I'm already a minute past. Thanks for listening. Opinions are those of the speakers. Let's see, how did I wrap it up? Free the NATO 3 at WordPress is another place that collects the material. People are still sorting out. This person is insistent. We're going to kick it off with the usual theme song for the World Labor Hour.
Just not working anymore. They used to call us working class. Hello, folks. Welcome to another edition of the World Labor Hour on listener-supported community radio station WFT, broadcasting from downtown Champaign, Illinois at 90.1 FM throughout central Illinois, and webcasting live worldwide at weft.org. The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WFT's station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Here's Bob with some of our underwriting announcements.
The Graduate Employees Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio. And programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. And the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
Okay, Bob, could you do one more, please?
Oh, I certainly can. We got a couple more. This hour of programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month. For more information, or for the unemployed and underemployed helpline, you can give them a call at 217-328-2295. And also, programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the Illinois Education Association Union. The Illinois Education Association's mission is to effect excellence and equity in public education and to be the advocacy organization for all public education employees.
Okay, thank you, Bob. We're going to be having a guest call in at half past the hour. She's the editor of the Fox Valley Labor News. It's a weekly newspaper that's published up in the Aurora, Naperville area, and it's been around since 1918. And it's a neat little newspaper. It's about 20 pages, comes out every week, and it's not too common, in the United States or Illinois. I mean, the other newspaper we have is out of Bloomington by Mike Matika, which comes out, I think it's a monthly or every other month. And it's kind of more of a news letter format than a newspaper, but nonetheless, it is a labor publication. So anyway, she's going to be calling in at half past the hour and just talking a little bit about the Fox Valley Labor News. And in the meantime, Bob, what's new in the world?
I got a story here that Kellogg's delivers Memphis a slap in the face. It says here, gentleman who's a officer in the BCTGM, Baker's Confectioners Tobacco Workers Union, said he went to the Gold Palace in Battle Creek, Michigan, okay. I guess. And he says that Kellogg's had a nice display in their lobby on what they do for African Americans. They put African Americans like Gabby Douglas on their cereal boxes each February. But this February, Jackson and his co-workers at the Memphis Kellogg cereal plant faced the prospect of spending Black History Month on the picket line. 3 months into a lockout, the company has yet to return to the bargaining table. It says during local contract negotiations in October 2013, Kellogg demanded the right to hire, here we go again, more part-time and casual employees at lower pay rates. When workers voted the proposal down, Kellogg locked them out. Scabs hired through an Ohio union-busting firm now produce Frosted Flakes and Fruit Loops. About 60% of Kellogg's workers are Black, matching the demographics of Memphis, but only 54% of the Black men in Memphis have jobs. The good-paying jobs at the Kellogg's plant are a rarity. Memphis labor is best known for the sanitation strike of 1968, during which Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. had come to town to support when he was assassinated. The civil rights community and Black church leaders helped lead that strike, famous for its "I am a man" slogan to victory. Today, the civil rights community is again supporting Memphis workers. The NAACP GOP is discussing a potential boycott of popular Kellogg's brands, and the local Southern Christian Leadership Conference leaders have sent two letters to CEO John Bryant. And the lockout was an issue back on Martin Luther King Day rallies in Memphis. And when asked how today's lockout relates to the 68 strike, Kevin Bradshaw, president of Bakery, Confectionery, Tobacco Workers, and Grain Millers Local 25-2, said it's a slap in the face for everything that's happened in our city. There's questions about whether the lockout was proper or not. Also this week, it says here the continued inaction by the Kellogg Company on the lockout of more than 220 workers at its Memphis, Tennessee cereal plant has drawn the attention of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, the CPC. The Congressional Progressive Caucus consists of 75 members of the U.S. House of Representatives from around the country. It's the largest caucus within the House Democratic Caucus, and they sent a letter on February 5th on behalf of the CPC to Kellogg Company CEO John Bryant and co-chairs of the CPC, Raul Gravalia, and Keith Ellison questioned the company's plan to create a new workforce of the future and urged the company to reconsider its approach and resolve the dispute.
Mm-hmm. You know, here locally, I think we talked about this. Last week we talked a little bit about it.
With Kraft Plant.
I mean, here they got a $3.6 million subsidy from the taxpayers through the Champaign City Council. Of course, that whole decision.
Exactly the same thing.
Was
part-time
not,
workers and casual employees.
Right. And the thing
lower
is.
Lower wages.
It's ridiculous because to get that. Okay, Kraft employs 1,300 people, right? So, of course, they, you know, if the city council wasn't willing to play ball, they would have threatened to move their facilities.
Yes.
And 1,300 jobs would be lost. However, you know, you shouldn't just succumb to blackmail like that. I mean, there could have been room for negotiation. For instance, okay, we'll give you $3.6 million over the course of so many years and, you know, tax abatement. But in exchange, you got to have all full-time employees paid at a minimum of $15 an hour and health care, you know, some kind of stipulation like that, some kind of benefit to the community. But here, they just hand it over for them to build their expansion out there, and Kraft systematically has been for a few years and is continuing to do so, is trying to get rid of all their full-time employees, bringing in more and more part-time temporary help at very low wages. I mean, why should we subsidize a corporation like this? And besides, Kraft is a multi-billion dollar profitable corporation, you know, an international corporation.
Yeah, this story goes on to talk about how this is making Kellogg a union-free company and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There was some solidarity from the other Kellogg's plants in Battle Creek, Michigan, and I'm losing that in the story here. But anyway, some of the other workers at the other plants have sent food baskets and things like that and collected donations to send to the workers in Memphis. But essentially, that's what they seem to think is they're trying to make Kellogg union-free.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about this a month or so ago when there was that huge handout to the Boeing company out there.
Oh,
Washington
yes.
State gave $8.7 billion in incentives to Boeing to keep their plant up there.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I had a story, which I ended up never doing on the air, but it talked about how they're just pitting one state against the other one to try to get the maximum amount, and that they're just trying to, you know, pirate workers away from other states and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to say, oh, you know, we're going to hire so many thousands of workers if we move our plant over here and give us, you know, these big incentives to move and tax mm-hmm. breaks and things like that, you know. In New York State, they gave some companies up there 20 years of free electric power to move up there and stuff like that. I mean, essentially, you know, they're just scabbing these things away from each state, and they're pitting communities against each other and states against each other, and it's a shame because, as you frequently say, the workers need to stand up together, and we realize we're all in this fight together.
Indeed.
And they're just trying to use this divide and conquer strategy.
Indeed, and then they wonder why there's budget problems, when actually the budget problems are revenue problems, and there you go. They're constantly cutting their tax base, you know, by giving these profitable, huge corporations these tax breaks and stuff, and then they wonder why you can't have enough money to repair the roads, fund the schools, guarantee promised pensions to state workers who paid into it, no less, themselves. It's just disgusting. But anyway, yeah, on that Boeing incident, after they got that largest corporate giveaway ever. They turn right around and force a concessionary contract on their machinist union.
Blackmailed them, the union, to say we're going to move all the jobs. They were shopping that plant around to, you know, they were down to like seven states that they had. And I think one of them was Illinois. They were talking about moving it up by Rockford or something like that. And they used these tactics to just divide people.
Yeah.
And like you say, they held that vote up there at the Boeing plant when they were on break, when they were on Christmas vacation, like, and stuff. So they knew that there were less workers there, you know, there was remarkably fewer votes in that second election in Washington than the first one, which was overwhelmingly turned down 2-1 against the contract.
Yeah, and the horrible thing about that story, it was the machinist's own international union that came in and worked on behalf of the company and forced the membership to made all sorts of threats to make sure they got the vote passed, and even then it only passed by a few votes.
When the local union leadership didn't even want to vote on the contract.
No. It's disgusting. I mean, there's too much corporate power. That's the problem. Corporations have too much power and too much money.
Corporations are people, Dave.
Oh, no, they're not. You know why they're not people? Because they have neither a soul to save or a body to incarcerate when they break the law. That's why they're not people, in a nutshell. I can't remember who said that. It's a quote from somebody, I think, way back in the late 1800s, in fact. And if somebody knows that who made that famous quote, I'd like to know, but it's a good one.
It seems like they got health care, though, because if corporations are going broke, we bail them out, you know?
That's a good one, Bob. Yeah, I never thought of it in that terms.
I never had either.
So. Okay. Well, my news story is it's a little locally based story. I don't know if any of the listeners that live in Champaign-Urbana or Champaign County in general have been hearing the latest controversies going on involving the 103rd state representative race, the race between Carol Ammons and a guy named Sam Rosenberg. Well, it's interesting because Carol Ammons has a history of activism in this community, I mean, for the people. What's interesting is that she's being viciously attacked by the News Gazette, a local newspaper that most people don't like, but it's our only newspaper. Extremely conservative to right-wing opinion viewpoints in their editorials. But anyway, they've been viciously attacking her, including, you know, trying to, you know, one story they had about how, she committed fraud because back 10 years ago, when she first tried to run for public office for Urbana School Board, they said she didn't meet the residency requirement because at one point she was forced to move out of her apartment and move in with her mother and Rantoul for 3 weeks. So therefore, they said that disqualified her and that she didn't disclose it. Well, anyway, that's one of the controversies. But the other one more recently has been made by Eric Jacobson, who is the husband of Naomi Jacobson, who is saying that Carol Ammons committed fraud because she didn't disclose that the degree, the bachelor's degree she had, was from a correspondence school that is illegitimate and, in fact, a diploma mill, and that therefore she should bow out of the race. Well, I mean, this is ridiculous. First of all, you don't need a bachelor's degree to run for state rep or any public office that I'm aware of. Secondly, I'm sure that when Carol Ammons took the correspondence class that, she wouldn't have spent time and money, doing this online to get a illegitimate degree. And in fact, this this school she got her degree from has been around since how long did you say that school's been around for, Bob, that Carol Ammons got her online degree from? You said since 1954. I mean, so they've been in this, it's just ridiculous. I mean, to me, I mean, how low? You know, I mean, is that the best they got against her? So anyway, there was a debate Tuesday night at the county board chambers between Carol Ammons and Sam Rosenberg, which I attended, and it was quite interesting. I mean, first of all, the chambers were packed. I mean, there had to have been 100 or more people there, which surprised me considering how bad the night was. But, you know, listening to the two, being asked questions by the moderators, what the big bot, they agreed on a lot of issues, but the big difference that I noticed was that Sam Rosenberg supports cutting corporate taxes across the board for corporations in Illinois and opposes the $15 an hour minimum wage. Carol Ammons, on the other hand, supports the $15 hour minimum wage and opposes across-the-board tax cuts for corporations. She said the only time that corporations should get any kind of tax relief or tax abatement or subsidy or whatever is only if there's certain conditions met. Like, for instance, she had a proposal, a specific proposal she had in a handout to where it was involving what's called a technology zone, where if a company wants to move in, they can get tax relief if and only if they provide full-time jobs, at least a certain percentage of the workers have to be full-time employees. They have to increase the number of full-time employees every year to keep qualifying for it by at least 10% of the current workforce, or a minimum of 3 new full-time employees. And they have to pay a minimum of 20% above the median income of Champaign County to these full-time workers. So she said that's the only way she would endorse giving any kind of relief, subsidies, or tax breaks to corporations, if and only if there is it's good wages, full-time positions with good wages, or some other kind of benefit to the community. So to me, and what was interesting too is I submitted 2 questions, both online before the debate when they were asking for questions, and also as soon as I got there, which was kind of early, and submitted it to the moderators in writing, and the question wasn't asked. And I thought it was interesting.
What you said,
question was asked.
And what were they, Dave?
Well, the 2 questions that the moderators didn't seem think that was fit to be asked to the candidates was, one, would you be willing to co-sponsor the current House bill to enact a universal Medicare for All health care system in Illinois, which is House Bill 942? The second question was, would you co-sponsor House Bill 3754, that would dissolve the Illinois Charter School Commission? And it's just interesting that they found that those 2 questions, they didn't want, it seems like they wanted to avoid them. Now, there was one real big controversial question about law enforcement and in general. And Carroll came right out and supported decriminalizing marijuana and ending the drug war. Rosenberg said he would definitely, consider wanting to lighten, have sentences that weren't so harsh and all that, but stop short of calling for an actual end of the drug war.
Right.
It was a real interesting debate, and it was there were some good questions asked, though, I have to admit.
Yeah, good. Like you say, it was a terrible weather night out there. I'm surprised that many people showed up.
Indeed.
And packed
But, I don't like those moderated debates in terms of the questions. Now, as far as the candidates, who goes first, this, that, and the other. But I think they need to have a debate where it's like a town hall meeting, so to speak, to where anybody can be stand up and ask whatever question they want.
Yeah.
I think that would be
nice
a lot better.
To see if the candidates were more or less unprepared, weren't given the questions in advance, so they could see what they really thought.
Mm-hmm.
And, let them think on their feet a little bit instead of just reading off of note cards that they had prepared in advance.
Stuff. I don't know. I don't think the candidates were, I don't think they were given the questions that were going to be answered, of them.
Yeah.
So, because I could tell a couple times where both Carol and Sam Rosenberg, kind of hesitated for a moment
think
before they answered.
It. Sure, good.
Sure.
Hey, our caller called up and said that quote about corporations have no soul.
Yes.
William Jennings Bryan.
Really? Okay, yeah. Great. Well, thank you, caller, for enlightening us on that.
Yeah. I got another story we could probably do real quick here. Last week, I guess it was, when President Obama had a State of the Union address, he made quite a bit of news by talking about raising the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour for federal contractors. But then a few days after that, a lot of news came out that this would not apply to thousands of disabled workers who currently make sub-minimum wages, says some as low as pennies an hour. These are hired under these 14C programs. Now, in a Tuesday morning interview this week, U.S. Secretary of Labor Thomas Perez referred to the 14C, an exemption in the Fair Labor Standards Act that excludes workers with disabilities from minimum wage protections, that they're if they're employed in certified training programs, as a provision of the law that really has worked to the detriment of people with disabilities. And he says that's one of the issues we're examining right now as we prepare to finalize the executive order, he said. This statement follows a letter issued by more than 25 civil rights, disabilities, and labor organizations calling on Obama administration to eliminate the use of sub-minimum wage for federal contractors. It says all employees of federal contractors should mean all employees, regardless of disability status, the letter read. We believe that is both economically sound and morally just to ensure that people with disabilities have access to the same wage protections as those without. So, We'll see if how this executive order ends up getting written, whether they do include these disabled people or not in there. But it maybe the Department of Labor and the executive branch is looking at actually including these people in there.
Okay.
It says that some disability advocates maintain that paying sub-minimum wages under this 14C, known as sheltered workshops, must exist in order to give disabled people employment opportunities.
Okay. So. All right, real quick, I got some public service announcements here. Next Saturday on February the 15th from 2 to 3 at the Urbana Free Library, Brian Dahlner will be talking about his new book, WPA Workers in Illinois, and mentions doing research at the University of Illinois Library, mention of segregation, Champaign, and citation of late 19th century editorials in the News Gazette. And anyway, check that out. It's at the Urbana Free Library from 2 to 3 p.m. Next Saturday. And let's see here. Also, Labor Notes Conference is coming up Friday, April 4th through Sunday, April 6th in Chicago. Where there's going to be an actual labor media workshop there, which I'm going to be participating in. But anyone that would like to go, you can get a hold of labornotes.org for more information. And we'll see if this is our caller here. Hello, WFT, you're on the air.
Well, hello. This is Jennifer Rice, calling from up north in Aurora from the Fox Valley Labor News.
Well, welcome to the show, Jenny. You got a lot of snow up there?
It's been a little flurries for about the last 3 hours. It's starting to accumulate, so I think it's going to stick, and we're probably going to have some problems later on this afternoon when people, if they're working a day driving home, they'll probably have some problems.
Okay. Well, very good. Well, thanks for calling in. I found it's really an interesting story. I found out about you actually through a friend of mine that lives out all the way out in Oakland, California, which is kind of ironic. But you're the editor of the Fox Valley Labor News, I love the motto of your paper, an advocate publication for men and women who labor for a living. And
absolutely.
You've been around since 1918. It says here.
I call it the best kept secret in the western suburbs of Chicago.
Okay.
But yeah, we have been around a long time. We're never short of news, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So it's a good thing. Keeps us in business, and it keeps the word out there about the workers' rights and what needs to be done to preserve them. And you wouldn't think there'd be so much news going on, but it just seems month to month, week to week, there's new things that come out that we are never at a shortage of new stories.
Yes, indeed. And, it's interesting. I've got a copy of your, January 2nd and January 9th editions here. It's a nice 20-page newspaper that, by the way, it comes out every single week, 52 weeks, 52 times a year.
Absolutely.
It's all in color. I should say the front page is in color, the rest is in black and white. But what I find interesting is you got a combination of local labor news stories as well as national and international labor-related news stories. And some of them are quite controversial. I mean, I noticed in your January 9th issue, you actually had an article about the Boeing contract vote up in Seattle, in which you had two articles opposing views, one from our mutual friend in Oakland, California,
yes,
who was upset about how the Machinist Union International had conducted the contract vote in favor of the Boeing Corporation, and then you had a article from the actual International Machinist Union. I guess it's really interesting, the fact that, you're being a local, newspaper, and you have, a sports page in here, and legal notices and advertising and stuff that, you do kind of a both. You do sort of a practical sort of local function as well as sort of issues of the day.
Absolutely. I want the subscribers that we have to realize that the fight isn't always just on local issues. Sometimes you can get so caught up in your own battles that it's nice to know that there's other places around the country that are going through the same struggles that you're going through. So, and that's why I don't always put just local news in there. I want the readers to know that this is a nationwide struggle that, workers' rights need to be addressed. And sometimes it's nice to know that you're not alone if you're in any particular fight. It's nice to know that across the country that things are going on. So that's why I always like putting in the national news.
Also, a lot of times, at least, you know, living here down in central Illinois, a lot of times things that happen in, say, Chicago or L.A. or New York, it seems like it's a world away. But, you know, it always ends up coming to you eventually. And I think that's a great service. And when you talk about more national, even maybe international news that's going on, that you're kind of giving readers sort of a heads up, if you will, letting them know that this might be coming to your town.
Exactly. We had some apprentices from Roofers Local 11 out of Chicago contacted me a month ago, and they had seen our paper, and the instructor wanted to get a bunch of subscriptions for the young men and women that are going through their program. And I said, hey, that's wonderful. And we had a discussion about it, and he said, you know, I really want to get into the minds of these young apprentices. What's out there? You know, it's, having a union job is not just about being in a union. It's about being active, and it's about knowing what your union does for you. What happens if you don't have your union? The unfairness that goes on in companies where there aren't unions. So he wanted to get them all subscriptions so that as they start their journey through their union, he wants them to realize and grasp what being in a union means. And I thought that was wonderful that, you know, they got about 15 subscriptions. So, you know, I applauded him for what he did, because being in a union isn't always about just getting up and going to work and punching a time card. You know, you really have got to be active in that union if you want to have results. So I was really happy that he got some papers for them.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, both the fact that your newspaper was available to accommodate that, and also my hat's off to that, you know, member, or I should say the official of the the Roofers Union for thinking like that, because unfortunately, a lot of leadership and a lot of unions aren't that, how should I put it, you know, what would be a good term, Bill, that basically that they don't see that far, you know, ahead, if you will, you know. And I think that's the fact that he thought that was an important part of the apprenticeship says a lot.
Right. Yeah.
That was great, and to think that, you know, our paper offers that as well.
Yes, indeed.
That was nice, because, you know, when there's rallies, when there's marches, when there's Haymarket Day that happens in Chicago, you need bodies out there, and every one of these union members are also a voter. So, you know, we have a political watch section in our paper. And I put that in there a few years ago because the readers need to know what the Democratic candidates, what their issues are. So, again, having this instructor at this apprenticeship have them start getting this paper. So I'm not saying they're going to read it front to back. That's fine. But, you know, look at the headlines. Realize that there's stuff going on in your own town and nationwide. As long as they're starting to get that at this young age when they're starting their apprenticeship, that's wonderful, because in the end, that's going to help them.
Yeah, that reminds me. My name's Bill, and that reminds me of a song. I believe it was by Steve Earle. The revolution starts now in your own backyard, in your own hometown.
Okay.
I like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe we can find that song and play
okay.
it later.
Just let you know, you know, I'm a retired member of the Carpenters Union, and Bill's a current member of the Laborers Union.
So. Yeah, we're doing big outreach. We got a billboard now.
Oh, okay.
Out there in Route 45, out by where our
okay.
hall is.
Bill's talking a little bit facetious here. It's kind of more like it's about time kind of thing. But
I always notice that unions really like billboards.
Well, yeah, it's one medium. But anyway, I really let, you know, your little sort of info sheet here you sent me. I really like this one paragraph you sent about what we can do together. It says, and it kind of relates to what you were saying, is that the Fox Valley Labor News tells the news stories other newspapers won't report or can't report because they're run by corporations. As an independent paper, we don't have corporations telling us what to cover or what to report. We can promote the relevancy and vitalness of unions throughout the communities we reach. Each week, the Fox Valley Labor News lets readers know why we need unions, what unions do for the workers' rights, and how they raise up the middle class. We build strong, positive image of labor and unions while reminding members of the importance of solidarity and pride. I mean, wow, that's a great statement.
Yeah, I believe that as well. There's, I, and I know there's union members that have a lot of apathy. You know, they're not happy with their union. Times are tough right now. I cover constantly different events, different meetings, forecasting when things might turn around. And it's going to be a while. And I know union members are frustrated and they're not getting a lot of hours. But it doesn't mean you turn your back on the union. You have this free time. Make it worthwhile. I always am a firm believer of people who say they always see a cause, they see an issue, and they go, gosh, I wish somebody would do something.
Yes.
Well, you know what? You are somebody. You can go do something. You can sign a petition online, can go to various meetings, you can join a march, you can get educated about the candidates in your town. That's what it's all about. And it's not just being a union member, it's just being a good, productive citizen. That's what you're supposed to do. Get educated, find out what issues are, and carry that through your job, through your family, and throughout life. That's what it's all about.
Indeed. And, you know,
you're not just an employee, you're a citizen.
Yes, yes.
Absolutely.
And, you know, unions are like a lot of other things. I mean, there's some are better than others, you know. But the ones that aren't so good, they're not going to, if people get demoralized and discouraged and aren't involved, it's not going to change for the better. The only way it's going to change for the better is if more members get involved and actually go to their union meetings and speak with their other fellow union members. That's the only way things will change for the better. And you can extend that, too, to our current political system, both local, state, and national.
Absolutely. On these union members, you know, they got to get fired up. We've got elections coming up. You need to know who your candidates are. You need to know what they stand for. They need to know whether they're going to help you or not. And you need to be an educated voter. This isn't a sideline job, being a citizen. It's being involved and taking action and going to some political forums where you got the candidates. Ask them some questions. Find out what's important to you and ask them some questions. And you know, there's just a lot of people that don't do that. They don't feel that, you know, one vote can change anything. And I disagree in that. I think when you collectively come together and you make the right decisions, you're always going forward. You're not always going to have the outcome that you want, but you're always going forward and you're educated. That's another important thing too.
Well, also another problem with unions is sometimes, they don't really educate their members politically. They just tell them who to vote for.
Not why.
And Dave just did a local story here about a state campaign, a congressional campaign. And the two candidates, this one candidate.
For state rep, yes.
For state rep, yeah. One candidate is somebody who opposes a local public project building a new jail. And she has been ignored by the building trades unions who have just went right to back this another candidate. And Dave was describing this candidate, and he would have been really good running as a Republican about 30 years ago. You know,
instead of a Democrat, yes.
Whereas this woman, African-American woman, is a very strong local activist who has done a lot for the community, and some of the local Democrats are just slinging mud on her in this primary.
Well, what the wrinkle in the story is that a lot of rank and file building trade members are very angry right now because of the endorsement of her opponent when they didn't even get an opportunity to have the candidates come to their union meetings and let them hear them speak and have a sort of a say on the endorsement, you know.
Wow.
So, you know, this is the thing. This is why people, and you know, the worst thing that could be done would be for members to say, oh, that's why I don't go to union meetings and not go. Instead, they need to be going to union meetings and, you know, speaking out. But anyway, I wanted just to talk about real quick, since we don't have television here, I kind of want to give a verbal description of your January 2nd edition. On the front page in color, you got the story about the 72 Dominick's stores in Chicago closing. And anybody that you know, goes up to Chicago has seen Dominick's around forever, it seems like, and how you mentioned how this is affecting, you know, 5,600 United Food and Commercial Workers members. You go to another page, you have an article from Georgia about a Teamster worker disciplined for dressing up as a CEO.
Yes! I wish there was a picture with that, but
yes, indeed. And then towards the back, you got an article, a local one from the Kane County Board, unanimously voted to adopt the Kane County Green Infrastructure Plan and Map. I mean, basically to preserve natural resources. I mean, this is... I think talk about all encompassing. I think this is these three articles, this one issue is a great example of your newspaper.
You know, something I noticed in your paper is the advertising, and also that you have the legal notices.
Yes, correct.
That's what we're having a problem with here at this radio station is financing, and I was just thinking that was just a wonderful. You know, thing right there, especially I'm not sure, but I have the impression that legal notices are can give you a pretty good boost, can't they?
Unfortunately, they are the main source of revenues for newspapers. And what I'm seeing more and more as I go out and about, and we do, drop off sites for the Fox Valley Labor News. Before I walk out of a building, I see another newspaper sitting there that I haven't seen before. And it's just a black and white newspaper. There's no color in it. There's no reporters. They're all press releases. And I go to the back of it right away to look at the legals, and they're full of legals.
Ah.
And what I'm seeing more is a trend. More and more people are starting newspapers or buying weekly newspapers, not dailies, weekly newspapers. Because the overhead is low. You can do it from your home.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to have
cut and paste.
Don't have to have a photographer. Don't have to have a sports writer. All you have to do is go find press releases.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm seeing these newspapers pop up more and more because the revenue is with those foreclosures, unfortunately, that have to be printed in a newspaper because it's a legal document that needs to be taken to court. So
I will say on one hand, though, that does give you a source of income that would not be in any way at all tempted probably to try and
influence
you. Thank you, Dave, for thinking of that
word. Exactly. No, I don't know what the benefit is of, what's the exchange if we have some attorneys in the paper. I mean, they're mostly for foreclosures, divorces, name change, but... people are more and more getting in tune to the fact that that is a revenue source, and they're not going away because they have to be printed. You have to have a legal document to take to court with you. And I'm seeing more and more of these papers pop up and taking the revenue. It's a dog-eat-dog world, you know? Mm-hmm. Someone's either going to go in our paper or they're going to go in another paper, so which is more attractive?
Yeah.
But, yeah, that is the main driving force for newspapers is the legals. Advertising is second, and subscriptions are, always a third.
Yeah, I noticed you have a few, advertising space, I should say, to the various unions and stuff, and that's going to mean about events and that sort of thing. But let me ask you something. This paper's been around since 1918. You and your family been involved that long? Are you recent editorial owners, so to speak?
I am a recent.
Okay.
We had some old issues in. At the office that I had found, and for the longest time, from the mid-70s, it's been owned by a family called the Richardsons. They are out of, DeKalb, Brookshell area, and it's been passed on through their generations there, and I think it started in the late 70s, it became a weekly paper. Before that, it was just a monthly paper.
Okay.
And it was really big in Elgin. It was a very, Elgin is historically a really strong blue collar town.
Mm-hmm.
And the Fox Valley Labor News did a lot of reporting with the Elgin building trade.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm interviewing an old retired union member, and he lives in Alabama, and he has a subscription to our newspaper. And when I went to send him a bill, I couldn't believe, we do have retirees. Usually, if they're out of state, a subscription out of state, it's a retiree because they've lived in the area and they've moved, and they still want to get the paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote him a little handwritten note, and he wrote me back, and he's like, I've always been involved in the union all my life. Call me if you're ever interested in talking. And I'm like, who doesn't want to talk to an older 80-year-old guy? They've got the best stories.
Yes, indeed.
Anyone who has lived that long. And his name is Curtis Mason, and he just has this incredible lifelong story of starting in Alabama, coming up to Elgin, working at a Chicago Rawhide in Elgin, and from there his life it took off being a union member. He became international union member, doing contracts for various unions all over the country. And he's just fascinating to talk to. He sent me a package of old Fox Valley labor news that he still has, because that's what you do. You, when you're old, you just collect everything and you don't throw anything away. So he had boxes of old labor news, and he sent them to me. And he was finding more information for me than I could about our own paper. He was able to tell me, he had the actual article of when it was announced that we were going from a monthly to a weekly. And it was great to see these old clippings that he has. But that was when the Richardson family had owned it, and it was up until just last year, Ed Richardson had passed away, and the paper was given to his wife, and she wanted to shut it down last January. So we were kind of deflated, you know, there goes our job, and it's a shame that something like this needs to go away. And then the family in the next breath asked if my husband and I would be interested in buying it. So that went from a whole other emotion, thinking I'm going to have to tell my husband I'll, you know, be out of a job, to, well, now what do you think? You think he'll want to buy it and help run this business? And he said, you know what, Jennifer, let's do it, because the alternative is you don't have a job.
Mm-hmm.
So if we make a go of it for 6 months, a year, 5 years, you know, it's a job.
How many people are involved with the paper on a weekly basis?
Very few. We have myself.
Mm-hmm.
We have a reporter who does the main, you know, hard news stories. He's also our photographer, so that he doubles as photographer and reporter.
Mm-hmm.
The sports reporter, his wife takes the photographs of the major league sports, and we have a religious writer in the paper who writes a daily or a weekly column.
Okay.
So, and myself.
Oh, wow.
Five people.
Okay. Man, you guys must really work sometimes, you know, pretty hard to get out of paper every week, you know?
It is incredible. It blows my mind every week what we are able to do to put this paper out. It really is.
So let me ask you, we're just about out of time, and I need to do this myself, and I got the information at home for myself, but I'd like you to share with the listeners, if somebody would be interested in getting a subscription to your paper, which, by the way, is very reasonable. I can't mention prices on the air because of our community radio status, but where could people, like a website or something that they could go to find out more
Yes.
about getting a subscription?
Yes, we are. One thing I wanted to make sure when I had come on board with the labor news was to give it a social media presence. It really wasn't something that, you know, I came on board 4 years ago, and there really wasn't a lot. And I really pushed to get social media out there. So we are on the web at foxvalleylabornews.com. We are on Twitter. We have a YouTube channel and Facebook. Everything can be found at foxvalleylabornews.com. And I could also, later on today, if anyone is on Facebook, I can put a link to a subscription up there. If not, it can always be found on our homepage under subscriptions. And, yeah, it's reasonable. There's a discount for union members and for veterans.
Okay.
So that's offered to them as well.
How many of them do you put out a week?
Good question. It is mailed to the subscriber's mailbox. You know, the union members are spread out all over the place. I mean, I know it says Fox Valley, and that's kind of, you know, the Aurora, Batavia, St. Charles area, but we have union members all over. They may be in LaSalle County down by Ottawa and LaSalle and Marseilles, but yet drive to Aurora to work. So we mail the paper out to all the subscribers, and we roughly have about a 4,000 subscription base, and then there's another 300 that are placed around the Fox Valley area at different locations, gas stations, mm-hmm. mom-pa restaurants, things like that, union halls, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have it out on the newsstand as well.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for calling. This has been really interesting.
Thank you for having me, and I tip my hat to you guys as well for what you do. We don't have enough labor-related media out there. So congratulations on what you two do as well.
Okay, I'm going to try to get an article to you as well for the upcoming Labor Notes conference that's going to happen in Chicago from Friday, April 4th to Sunday, April 6th. It happens every other year at various places in the country, and this year it's going to be in Chicago. So your readers might want to know about that. Okay, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you, David. All right, bye-bye.
Goodbye. Okay, that was Patti Smith, People Have the Power. Before that, Steve Earle, The Revolution Starts Now, a request from Bill Gorell. He referenced it in our interview with Fox Valley Labor News Editor. And just a couple of quick public service announcements that we weren't able to get in earlier is that tune in today from 2 to 3 p.m. on WRFU 104.5 for Neil Parthen's None Other Sports Show. And you can also catch that on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. on Comcast Channel 6, Urbana Public Television. Also tune in this Sunday and every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. for Labor's Worldview TV. So anyway, Bill, you had something you wanted to talk about here real quick in the last few minutes.
Well, we just had a caller talking about the Honeywell lockout in Metropolis, and I actually don't know what's going on. I don't know. Does anybody have any news on that lately? Or
I did a couple of stories a couple of months ago. One, they were kind of picking on the head of the local down there and were refusing to allow him to be part of the inspection team.
Oh, yes.
When that's supposedly one of the rules, that they have to let people from the local be part of the inspection team.
Yeah, that was the president of the local, wasn't it?
Right. Okay. Right. Uh-huh. But then a couple of weeks later, I thought I did a short story about how the company had backed down a little bit and allowed the workers back in, that the lockout had ended. That was the same week that Mike Griffiths was here.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. And, well. I think that was kind of a company was starting to cave in a little bit and was hiring back some of the employees there and stuff like that and was trying to resolve their contract dispute.
Well, anyway, we've reminded people of it, and if you want to get more up to date on it, I suggest you do an internet search, Metropolis Honeywell Lockout.
Yeah.
What's the union involved?
Mike Elk is a great reporter.
I've heard of Mike Elk.
Yeah, from In These Times, yes.
In These Times. So I would search through In These Times, and I'll definitely follow up and get an up-to-date report for next week's show.
Okay.
But, yeah, look through In These Times and do an internet search on Mike Elk because he's been very, very on top of reporting that whole story for several years down there.
Now, would that be oil, chemical, and atomic workers? Or do
they
even still exist?
It's
they
merge. Uranium, it's the uranium processing plant. It's the only processing plant in the country, I think, that does what they do down there.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's why it's so critical that they have trained employees there that know how to operate the equipment.
Yeah.
That's right.
Because when they had them locked out, there were some scares and some releases that threatened the community.
Some kryptonite leaks.
Yeah, and then Superman would be in trouble.
We'd all be in trouble.
They don't call it Metropolis for nothing down there.
And that's right on the Ohio River.
Not because it's a big city.
Yeah, and that's right on the Ohio River. Yeah, that's right on the Ohio River. So, I mean, if something would happen, there was any kind of spill, radioactive spill or anything, man, that would just be
I think the releases that they've had have been into the atmosphere at this point, you know. But
well,
either
maybe
way,
if,
you know,
maybe
atmosphere
if there was a
or
big,
groundwater.
Coal ash spill at the same time, maybe they cancel each other out or something.
Oh, boy, I don't want to think about that.
It was
going to
be our science report.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I think so. But
I think originally Peter Miller at one time was going to do a radical science show.
Really?
I can't remember, but he got in. I think he did something. They had some kind of debate at the U of I that he set up. I think it was Carl Estabrook and somebody else, and I don't know. I can't remember the details. I went and saw it. But
okay.
That would be an interesting program.
Yes, indeed.
I mean, you could probably get a slot here on this show.
And that would be a great program on a weekly basis, indeed.
Besides that, you can use this because now it's being recorded automatically, and it's easy to get the file, and then you can distribute over the internet, so you could use WEFT basically as your production studio for your new podcast.
That's a great idea. Okay, we're just about
so out. Think of that. Yeah. It costs $40 to be a member of WEFT. I think Paul Muth was talking about some training sessions coming up.
Airshifter training's coming up, starting two sessions, February 26th and February 27th. The first session is 6 o'clock and covers community radio. And then after that, the 27th covers FCC regulations. So, and then after that, there's 2 one-on-one sessions in the studio here where they teach you how to run the board and use the microphones and all the kind of techie stuff that you need. And yeah, it's free to any member of WEFT. So if you're not a member, sign up now and you can take the Airshifter training. And if you are a member, come by 113 North Market Street and get a application form, fill it in, and become involved.
Now, can any of these things be done on the internet?
You can
from the comfort of your own home while you're sitting in your bathrobe and slippers?
You can email airshiftertraining@weft.org, and they will send you an electronic format of the form. You can fill it out and return it.
Wow, electronic!
Okay, there you go.
Okay, well, we're just about out of time. Just to let the listeners know that you've been listening to the World Labor Hour on Listener Support Community Radio Station WFT in Champaign, Illinois. We're going to be having some interesting programs coming up next Saturday. Professor Ken Salo and Professor James Kilgore are coming in. Professor Ken Salo just returned from South Africa Christmas break. I went home to visit family and stuff. And boy, there's a lot going on labor related and social. You know, it's almost on the verge of a revolution in South Africa.
He's always got some interesting news about the miners and the things that are going on over there. And what he's turned me on to is the fact that there's so much of the farm community involved in some of these strikes and stuff over there.
Well, it's really sad that revolutionary moment they had
back in the 90s, yeah.
Right, got co-opted so badly.
Yes, indeed. And anyway, the following week, 2 weeks from today, State Representative Carol Ammons is going to be on the program. And I have... Carol Ammons. Yeah. And anyway, I've sent an email invitation to her opponent, Sam Rosenberg, to come on in March.
Excellent.
And we're going to have some other interesting guests that are already lined up, where we're fully booked up to the middle of March, believe it or not. It's good to have interest, and so keep tuning in. You're going to be hearing some really good guests and other information here on the World Labor Hour. So until next week, be safe and.